Hannaday presents, in the red corner, the undisputed, undefeated Weed Whacker Guy. Champion of hurling grass and pollen everywhere. And in the blue corner, the challenger, Extra Strength Hannaday. Eye drops that work all day to prevent the release of histamines that cause itchy allergy eyes. And the winner, by knockout, is Hannaday. Hannaday, bring it on.
Angel Reese y McDonald's tienen la clave para un post-game meal de campeones. Una QPC con salsa barbecue y tocino, papitas y un refresco. Los pros le llaman el Angel Reese Special. Llévate el Angel Reese Special solo en McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
En McDonald's participantes por tiempo limitado.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Big news in relation to defense. Defense spending must rise, warns Martin and Harris. And this comes on the heels of a suggestion from Volodymyr Zelensky that we should be seeing a pan-European army, that Europe has to stand up for itself. Decision yesterday by the French President Emmanuel Macron to invite EU leaders from across the bloc to Paris for an emergency summit tomorrow to look at what the EU can do, given what we now know as the attitude and position of America, and the intent of America and Russia to negotiate, or the purported intent of America and Russia to negotiate a settlement of the war in Ukraine, possibly without the involvement of Ukraine, and definitely without the involvement of the EU. And a number of people who have been in attendance, a number of senior ministers from across EU member states attending the Munich summit have said that it is a watershed, that it is a fundamental shift in the relations between America and the US and in the way that global alliances are framed. With me is Cathal Berry. He is, of course, a former commander of the Irish Army Ranger Wing, now TD. Cathal, the military response, first of all, the Taoiseach has poo-pooed the notion that there would be a European army. Is it a realistic prospect?
No, certainly not at all, Anton. And even the vibes from the EU in the last week or so is they don't want a single European Union army entity at all. What they're looking for is 27 highly capable individual militaries that can intervene and come together in a coalition of the willing. So it's not even technically possible because really defence is a national competence and no state is going to integrate its intelligence and its communications infrastructure into another state. So it's not technically possible and it's not politically feasible either. So 27 individual militaries working together and cooperating together is the most likely scenario.
So the if 27 are going to cooperate and work together, does that mean that we are going to see 27 significantly more heavily invested in militaries? Is there going to be a ramping up of defence spending across the EU?
Yeah, yes, there is already. And I know it's framed as defence spending and increases in defence spending, but really what it is, it's particularly in Ireland's case, it's investment in our national security and investment in our national resilience. And that's how it should be framed. And from Ireland's point of view, it's coming from a very, very low base entirely. So 15 years ago, we had 10,500 troops in our defence forces. Now we only have 7,500. So that tells you the headcount drop of 30% in the last 15 years. And if any organization in the country is reducing their headcount by 30%, it has chaotic consequences in relation to outputs and productivity. And our defense forces are no different.
Now, realistically, Cathal, is that going to be sufficient to fill the gap if the Americans decide that they are no longer going to be the backstop militarily for Europe?
Immediately, no. In the short term, no. And I guess that's what the conference tomorrow in Paris is all about. So it's going to be focusing primarily on Ukraine and it's going to, I guess, reassess the fallout of the last few days, that the NATO conference in Brussels on Thursday, Friday, and then the Munich Security Conference at the weekend. And realistically, what we're looking at is that there's going to be a settlement of the Ukrainian conflict probably around April. So it's going to happen very, very quickly. We've learned that about three quarters of the peace deal has already taken place. So Moscow has a significant diplomatic footprint and an embassy in Washington, and the Americans have a significant embassy in Moscow as well. So for the last number of months, these peace talks have been happening. Next week, so Marco Rubio, which is the US Secretary of State, he's traveling to Saudi Arabia to speak with his Russian counterpart, and they're going to look at the finer points of the deal. And perhaps late March, April, we could be looking at a summit of Putin and Trump, who sign off on this deal in front of the world's media. And the big problem from Europe's perspective is they're not involved in the negotiations. That's problem number one. And problem number two is that's going to be needing a very large peacekeeping force or stabilization force to monitor the ceasefire along the line of contact in Ukraine. And the Americans have said they're not prepared to put boots on the ground at all. So it's going to fall to European countries to do so. So the question tomorrow in Paris will be, is the EU going to provide a peacekeeping force to Ukraine in around April to supervise and monitor the ceasefire? And if the EU are not prepared to do that, then who is willing, what individual countries are willing to form a coalition of the willing to step forward and do that? And the fact that the summit is taking place in Paris is an indication that perhaps France, under President Macron, might be willing to lead that deployment. So,
and can I ask on that, Carl? This is to assume that, let's imagine, the summit occurs between Russia and America and a deal is done. If the EU look at that deal and are unsatisfied with it, is there any option for them to say, we will take up the slack in terms of provision of arms and financial support to Ukraine to allow the fighting to continue?
It is a possibility in theory, but they don't have the capability. Even with Britain, who's not a member of the EU anymore, even them helping out will not be able to fill the gap. And most likely, as we've learned over the last 96 hours, really, when the Americans make a decision, there'll be consequences of that decision as well. They will absolutely cease any arms transfers to the Ukrainian armed forces, and it won't be militarily viable for the conflict to continue if America withdraws its support. And not only its armed support, but also its intelligence support as well, its satellite imagery, all the indirect, discrete support that's been given to the Ukraine armed force as well. So it won't be viable to continue the conflict if America withdraws, which is the most likely scenario.
Well, that then goes to the sort of the reaction that there was from a number of senior ministers across Europe in the wake of what J.D. Vance had to say at the EU summit. What about the shift that we are seeing in alliances around the world on that basis? If we can no longer rely on America to be active friends, allies and supporters, what does that mean for Europe? And do we have the capacity to answer the call that's implicit in it?
Yeah, so the transatlantic relationship has been transformed in the last number of months, for sure. So we can no longer rely on America, at least for the next 4 years. Who knows who the next president will be and whether it will be a shift in the opposite direction. So it has major implications for the transatlantic relation between Europe and America, but also in relation to Taiwan. So America seems to be pivoting towards the Pacific now. They see that China is their real challenge, their rival, and they're going to focus on the Pacific, and they're going to leave Europe to the Europeans. But it does have major implications for Taiwan, because President Xi is looking at what's happening in Ukraine, and he sees that a deal can be done with the Trump administration, and Taiwan absolutely depends on American support to maintain its semi-independence from the Chinese mainland, and that could change rapidly again in coming years. So it's a very concerning geopolitical landscape at the moment.
And is Macron... Is he getting his elbows out and throwing shapes to try to position himself as the prime mover in a more unified Europe? Is that the idea?
There's a small element of that, but to be fair to Macron and to the French, they recognise that the UK have left the EU now. They recognise that there's a caretaker, a very weak government in Germany. There's elections, general election on in Germany this day week. And really, it falls to France to exercise some leadership at this stage. So I think that's the primary motive. The secondary motive on top of that then, as I said, is there's going to be at least 50,000 European troops required to go into the ground in Ukraine in the coming months. And it may be Macron positioning France to lead that deployment. And that has obviously implications for Ireland. Are we going to send troops? Is it going to be an EU mission? Is it going to be a UN-mandated mission, or will it be a coalition of the willing? And do we have enough troops? Because we have a lot of personnel in the Middle East at the moment. So is it even technically possible? Now, we have about 150 troops as part of an EU battle group at the moment. They're very, very well equipped, very well trained, and they're at high readiness. So there is a possibility if the political decision is made to deploy.
But God, it's a difficult political decision to put Irish troops in a position where they are peacekeeping against the Russians.
Yeah, absolutely. And this won't be a blue beret mission with binoculars and a radio. This is going to be a very, very heavily armoured mission with tanks, with artillery, and perhaps American air support. The Americans have said they won't put boots on the ground, at least officially. Presumably they'll have their CIA people and they'll have their special forces on the ground, right, but just small numbers. But they may be able to provide some air support from an intelligence point of view and from a direct action point of view. But the suggestions, or at least the indications are that the Russians would be very interested in testing this new force and see what their response will be. So it's going to be very, very robust peacekeeping. It's going to be very similar to the situation in the Balkans in the mid-1990s, where NATO deployed heavy armour, heavy artillery, and air support as well to enforce a peace settlement. So very, very concerning developments. But I think that the main takeaway from the last 4 days is this is going to happen very, very rapidly now. Three quarters of the peace deal is already done. Marco Rubio is going to Saudi Arabia, speak to his counterpart, Russian counterpart next week. There'll probably be a summit between the two, between Putin and Trump a few weeks later. And we could be looking at a settlement around April in Ukraine, which is a positive development for sure. But unfortunately, will it be a just and enduring peace? And that's the key question. And it's an open question at this stage.
Last thing then, Cathal, if we are going to be part of that general stepping up of investment in defence and in a more cohesive military across the EU, what will that mean for Ireland? What should it look like? Because if you look at countries of similar scale in population terms like Finland, they greatly outstrip us in terms of military capacity. If you look at similar economic countries like Singapore, they also greatly outstrip us. So what are we talking? Is it tanks? Is it jet fighters? Is it more Navy? Where should we be?
First of all, it's just the basics. And step one should be to go back to where we were 15 years ago, where we could put eight naval ships to sea. Now we can only reliably put one to sea. We need to increase the number of troops, and also we need to look after the air picture as well. We have no primary radar system. We're the only EU country. Even tiny Malta has a primary radar system. We don't even have that, and an intercept capability for our airspace as well. So in summary, we should be able to police our landmass, our territorial and economic waters, our airspace and cyberspace as well. And that is a basic function of any sovereign nation. We're not asking for anything unusual here. This is absolutely a basic function of any nation state.
Cathal, thank you very much. That is Dr. Cathal Berry, who is a former commandant in the Irish Army Ranger Wing and, of course, former independent TD for Kildare South.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Reese and McDonald's tienen la clave para un post-game meal de campeones. Una QPC con salsa barbecue y tocino, papitas y un refresco. Los pros le llaman el Angel Reese Special. Llévate el Angel Reese Special solo en McDonald's. Pa-da-pa-pa-pa. En McDonald's participantes por tiempo limitado.